This is a free Off the Ball podcast. For access to the best football analysis from the likes of Kevin Kilbane, Dion Fanning, Owen Doyle, Keith Tracy, Henry Winter and lots more, become an Off the Ball member today.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Green Scene on Off the Ball.
With Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams.
All right, welcome. Welcome to another episode of The Green Scene where we delve into all things Irish football. It's been 3 weeks in a row now. It's been a good stint for us after an indifferent summer. We're back like we never left. And delighted as ever to be joined by Matthew Brennan. Matthew, how are you?
All good, David. No sign of Ben.
No sign of Ben. Ben is off, I don't know, ear to the ground, doing some journalistic.
As always.
You know. Yeah.
Work hard, play hard.
Yeah, he works hard and he plays hard. Mm. And often.
And
he is out sunning himself, I think, somewhere. But he's also, you know, doing some research, doing some important background work to some work that you might see over the next few months in OTB. Let's keep shtum on that over the next...
let's keep giving the benefit of the doubt on this
50
occasion,
minutes or so. Yeah, it's, you know, we were talking in our pre-show meeting here and we were saying maybe we are the El Chiringuito of Irish football now after Troy Parrott's little cameo the other night. Maybe I should have said bienvenidos a todos. Estamos muy contentos para tener ustedes aquí. It's been a couple of important days in the life of Troy Parrott. He came on against Valencia for Real Betis, made his debut. 20 minutes, came on, 0-0, couple of decent touches, and then plays a fairly key role in the winning goal. What did you make of his first exposure of La Liga football?
Yeah, couldn't have been any more encouraging, really, other than the fact he probably should have scored with his first touch. That would be the only thing we could have gotten from it. But no, take nothing away from him. It was exceptional. I was really, I say exceptional, maybe that's a little bit over the top, and we do have a tendency to speak too highly. But as far as debuts go, you can't really ask for too much more. You do draw parallels to the feeling we had last season around Evan Ferguson when he did make that move over to Rome to play under Gasperini, and we thought, you know, yeah, this guy gets the best out of his strikers, it's going to be amazing. We watched his debut and he was pretty good, he held the ball up.
I'll admit that I was super excited and way over the top this time last year at Evan Ferguson.
Yeah,
but
and listen,
I need to temper that now this year.
Yeah, once bitten, twice shy, but that shouldn't take away from the fact that Troy Parrott did play very well. And I think the immediate thing that I noticed, having watched the entire game, I decided to watch that over the Celtic capitulation. So any of you Celtic fans out there, I hope you're doing okay and you're getting over what happened there midweek. But obviously Troy Parrott didn't start the game, but I still thought it'd be a decent exercise to get a look at Real Betis. And you've seen bits and pieces of them over the last couple of years. You know, they did get to the Conference League final there when they lost out to Chelsea. No shame in that. Chelsea had absolutely no right to be in that competition, and that's probably a discussion for a different podcast. But you can see the hallmarks of what Spanish football looks like. You could see it imprinted all over that game, really. Like, you know, you're getting to 15, 20 minutes left in a game. Real Betis could be content with a point away from home. Valencia could be content with a point at home against a team who qualified for the Champions League last year, but that was not the case at all. It was pretty gung-ho. It was back and forth. It was, you know, I think Valencia had two or three men back when Real Betis did go and score the winner. Parrott does really well, holds off his man, not for the first time and not for the last time in that game. Looked very, and it's something you pointed out before, actually, even the last time we watched Ireland play, when Troy Parrott was involved, that he just had filled out. He just looks bigger, and he doesn't look any less agile or anything like that. It just seems as though whatever way he's looking after himself is optimal, which you would expect for a footballer at that elite level. But you've often seen it go wrong for players too, when they do try and kind of change their physical makeup. And I'm not even sure if it's something he's tried to do. Maybe it's just a natural thing as you do get that bit older.
Yeah.
But he looked very comfortable physically, and we'll see how he adapts to the way in which Real Betis want to play football going forward.
Yeah, he seemed to fill out his frame all right. He's 24 years old. He's coming into what should be the elite part of his career over the next 7-8 years. We hope even longer from an Irish perspective. And for the goal, he bullied, well, I'm not sure if it was the centre back or the right back, and obviously took a good touch and played the left winger away for Betis. And the thing about, and I spoke about this in the Evan Ferguson situation last year, you need players around you to create the chances, especially as a striker. And there are some good players in that Betis team. Like Paulo Fornals, obviously, was at West Ham. Isco, who's, you know, one of the all-time kind of cult heroes of Spanish football. Pablo Garcia, who scored a winner, has been linked to clubs in England over the last over the last couple of weeks as well. So, and Manuel Pellegrini plays a pretty decent attacking style of football as well.
Especially when he's over in Spain too, I suppose it's a little more noticeable with that Malaga team from all those years ago. You know,
the lore of that Malaga team.
Oh my God, you could go through that all day if you want. Yeah. Ruud van Nistelrooy is playing for them as well.
But like, just really interesting and class as well. Just, I think someone tweeted on Tuesday, like, oh, you know, Troy Parrott could be playing in Southampton tonight for West Ham, and there he was playing in Seville, or sorry, playing in Valencia for Betis at the Mestalla as well, an iconic stadium, which eventually will be torn down, I think. But to play there,
and it'll all be torn down at some stage, just the way it's going.
Yeah, true. But it was just class to see him involved. And Graham Hunter was on the show, on the football show last night, speaking to Owen, and spoke about the lifestyle he's going to have there, and you know, the education he's going to have under Manuel Pellegrini. And like, it's nice to be excited. Okay, we probably are guilty of being too excited sometimes in this podcast about certain Irish footballers, but I think it's just nice. It's something to look forward to over the next season. I know, like, anecdotally from talking to a few people, like, a lot of people are going to take the trip over to Seville and, tick off a nice Spanish city off the list and go watch and play. I think it's really great. They've got Betis of 2 wins out of 2. And the one thing I have noticed now from the Roma situation last year, that both games have been 1-0, and Roma won a lot of games last year 1-0 at the start.
Yeah.
Let's not read too much into that.
No, and I think purely based off of the, whatever, 90 minutes I watched the other night, the 1-0 wins Roma were getting were not like mm-hmm. this. Troy Parrott's going to get chances.
Yeah.
Far more chances than Evan Ferguson got, I would be confident in saying. Obviously, they are not the same situation, but the parallel is there, and it's very rare we have parallels like this where we've got young, talented strikers going and playing on the continent, obviously in different countries, different ideas of how football should and is played. And it's funny as well to see Roma this season under Gasperini playing some incredibly fluid football.
Yeah, Daniel Malin and Paulo Dybala. Yeah. Malin hat-trick, Dybala hat-trick of assists.
Yeah. Where was that last year?
Yeah. If you're heading over to Seville and you're going to go, or maybe you're heading over to Spain and you're going to go watch Troy Parrott play, please let us know. Email thegreenscene@offtheball.com or get in touch with us on our social channels, Off the Ball Football or Off the Ball Instagram.
See the little lad with the Ireland flag, with the What's the Flag or whatever. Yeah,
yeah. Brilliant. He must have been, it must have just been over there maybe for a holiday or something.
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah.
And it was like, that is class. He was like, oh, I'm in Valencia this week. Yeah. Let's go and watch Troy Parrott make his debut. Yeah, really interesting things. And by the time you're maybe hearing this evening, Troy Parrott and Real Betis will know what Champions League games they'll have this season. So they'll have obviously 8 ties in Europe. So that's really exciting as well.
I think Spanish football is going to capture the people here as well. Maybe a little bit more than perhaps Serie A did. And even what the Eredivisie did too.
Yeah.
It's just a bigger platform too. There's so many storylines over in Spain as well.
Yeah.
It does have a feel, obviously not what like peak La Liga was when it was on Sky Sports and all that sort of stuff. And
it feels
it's closer to that than it's ever been, you know, as far as the characters that are involved and the talents. Like the best players in the world are in La Liga really now. You know, like the floor of the Premier League sure is far higher than the floor of La Liga, but it seems as though the real upper echelon of football and talent is over there.
Yeah, like we spoke about this in different shows during the week and Inside the Odds and on the football show. Like it's a Premier League that kind of maybe lacks superstars.
Well,
without Guardiola, without Klopp, without Mourinho. And if you look at Spain, obviously you got Mourinho, Real Madrid, okay. It's a mad situation that he's back at Real Madrid all of a sudden, but he's there. Barcelona obviously, you know, got Lamine Yamal, got some World Cup winners in Rodri and Pedri and different players. Madrid have signed obviously some big names over the summer, even like Bernardo Silva and Denzel Dumfries, and I don't know, maybe Trent is on his way out.
Yeah, but you've Yandy Amanda there, you've got Mbappe there, obviously. Yeah. Vinicius Jr. hung around.
Yeah, Madrid obviously won 4-1 last night, and Mbappe got a hat-trick. Yeah. But like that is going to be a really interesting game now in a few weeks when Real Madrid play Real Betis.
Yeah.
And you have Mourinho on one side who gave Troy Parrott his debut, and then they're going to meet, I think the first game is in Seville in a few weeks' time. They obviously have to play Barcelona as well, and that's in a couple of weeks' time. I think it's the 18th of September as well. So yeah, just a class thing to be able to talk about.
And it's accessible too as well, because you're going to be able to see a lot of La Liga on Premier Sport this season as well. So.
Yeah, and like growing up as well, like for me it was like Premier League on a Sunday, and then Sunday evening you'd sit down and you'd watch at the time Real Madrid and Barcelona with Ronaldo and Messi, and you'd be like, oh, this is class. Yeah. You listen to people like Graham Hunter and Sid Lowe and shows like this, and Wacha Vista, like it was just brilliant. People like Jerry Armstrong. So look, let's hope it goes really well for Parrott. And yeah, he's in an Ireland squad announced in a couple of weeks' time as well. I'm sure he'll be there as long as he's fit. One player who might have put himself into the reckoning to, I think he'd definitely be in the squad, but maybe even start in a few weeks' time against Kosovo, is John Egan.
Yeah.
He was exceptional on Saturday.
Yeah, I was delighted to see this.
Yeah, against an admittedly a poor Man United team, but
who cares?
Egan was brilliant. And for someone who nearly couldn't get a club 18 months ago, to be playing in the Premier League in the middle of a really good defence against Manchester United, who spent hundreds of millions, and Egan was exceptional.
He looked right at home. And John Egan's one of these guys, he just seems like one of the good guys in football as well, outside of anything else. And we do obviously have the fondest memories, I suppose, from an Irish perspective, as far as his club career goes, being part of that Sheffield United team in the Premier League under Chris Wilder, who had those sort of random overlapping fullback or overlapping centre halves, which is like something we haven't seen since. It obviously doesn't really work too well anymore. The teams are able to figure it out fairly quickly. But as you say, left Sheffield United, floundered around at Burnley a wee bit, had some bad injuries, played I think maybe 7 or 8 times with them, then ended up at Hull, was in and out of the team, wasn't integral really at all. Sergei Yakirovich was asked during the January window last year when he was being linked away, he's been linked with a move to West Ham, obviously, who were fighting relegation in the Premier League. He was asked, how important is he to you? Would you be happy to let him go if that's what he wants to do? And he said, look, if you would have said to me at the start of the season that John Egan was going to be a really important cog in this team that's way outperforming what it's expected to be doing and what on paper it should be doing, I would have laughed at you. But John Egan has gone and he's an Indian summer, a fair way of describing it.
Yeah,
as far as his career goes, he's not that old, but he's really, there was a point there where a lot of other people and players would have phoned it in a wee bit and just, you know, saw out the last couple of years.
He'd be 34 in October. 38 caps for Ireland, 3 goals. Obviously, captained the team under Stephen Kenny a couple of times as well. I think it's just a great story. He's just a credit to himself, his family, is where he comes from as well. Obviously, the son of a legendary Kerry footballer as well. And just to not give up, like, and always back yourself. It's something that everyone can take something from, is that, you know, he looked like he was on his way out. He ruptured his Achilles.
Really bad. At that age too.
A lot of people don't come back from that. And he has. And now he's playing in the Premier League. And from doing a bit of research about Hull before the Premier League season and kind of looking at them last season as well, Sergei Yakirovich has assembled a team of maybe players that I wouldn't want to say outcasted, but, you know, they weren't the first choice. Like Matt Crooks, playing in centre midfield, is 32. Had played at Middlesbrough and a couple of clubs in the AFL. Yeah. And, you know, he dominated that midfield against Man United last week against two players that cost over 100 million. So he's a essential part of this. He's the fulcrum of that centre half partnership. They were playing 4 at the back all through the pre-season, and then Yakirovich is like, we're going to play 3-5-2, or we're going to play 3-4-2-1, or 5 at the back against United, 5-4-1. Well, on the Tuesday, and then he was just brilliant.
Yeah, and I think your outcast thing is a very fair way of describing it, because they were under sort of a transfer embargo thing where they could only bring in frees, and that's how Ollie McBurney came in, and he spoke about them watching Las Palmas praying they would get relegated because that would make Ollie McBurney free, and they bring him over and he's one of the best strikers in the championship. And you're right, and they did play forward to back a lot last season. They have a very talented centre half who would have partnered John Egan a lot last year, and Charlie Hughes, who picked up a late injury kind of during the summer. So I think that's probably more of a necessity thing to switch to the three centre halves of Noble Mendy and Semi Ajayi, and then obviously John Egan at the heart of it. But look, Hull are going to have a tricky season. There's no way dancing around that. But look, John Egan's going to play a fairly important part for them over the course of the year, you'd have to imagine, and he couldn't have got off to a better start. He was brilliant.
Yeah, and I think there's going to be a couple of players in that team that are going to learn from him, and hopefully from an Irish perspective that happens as well. There's a fellow called Lucas Harrington. I know he missed a penalty for Australia in the World Cup. He was only 18, but he's just signed for Hull City. But I've seen him in a couple of games for Australia in the World Cup. I thought he was excellent. And I think someone like him is going to learn a lot from someone like John Egan, who's played up and down the leagues, played at Gillingham and been at Sunderland, played Ireland from under 16s all the way to 21s. And the one I know story I have from John Egan is I'd say he must have been 16, so that must be 17 years ago. But I remember our club, Carrick Rovers, had a really good underage team. I think they're under 15 or under 16. Got to the last eight of the National Cup, went down to Cork and played Greenwood. Greenwood beat them 1-0. And I remember talking to one of the people involved, Artie News, like a club legend down home. And he was like, oh, he'd worked actually with Sean McCaffrey and a couple of Irish underage teams as well. And I was like, I was quite young at the time, but I was like, what players, you know, who were the difference? And he's like, there was a lad playing centre back for Greenwood, and he's going to go definitely to England. His name is John Egan. He's the son of a legendary Kerry footballer. He said he was absolutely excellent. And it's great to hear those stories as well, like that, that he has made it all the way to the top level of professional football in England and play for his country and captain his country. And yeah, just a, you know, a really, yeah, colossus.
Yeah, and it not be smooth for him either.
No.
He hasn't got there purely off the fact that he's talented. He's had to come through a lot of different sort of stuff as far as injuries and all that sort of stuff, relegations and that stuff can burn you and
tarnish
you, but it hasn't happened to John Egan, so I'm delighted. And listen, we've got a game coming up, and we being the Republic of Ireland have got a game coming up in September. It's going to be a busy couple of windows, and if John Egan is playing Premier League football, there is absolutely no reason why he won't be starting in some of those games.
Someone who obviously made his debut in a fairly important game we had a couple of months back,
you might remember it,
Was Harvey Vale. Mm. He played centre midfield. I'd say he played a slightly different role for QPR last Saturday. What have you seen of him, and what do you make of Harvey Vale? Because we have maybe a certain level of expectation on young Harvey at the moment.
We do. And he came into the fold around the Czechia game. There'd been a little bit of kind of rumour about him switching allegiance from obviously England to the Republic of Ireland, and then we thought, okay, this is convenient timing. I wonder, is he going to be in the squad? In the squad he was. He did come off the bench, touch the ball maybe once or twice, then played against Macedonia and was fairly impressive, a lot more advanced. Now Harvey Vale is, he's not that old, he's 22, 23, he's played in a lot of different positions. People will have researched all this stuff when he was announced in the squad, so I'm sure a lot of people already know that, but very comfortable anywhere in the middle, deep, advanced, somewhere in between, and has played a lot of his QPR career out on the wing as a right midfielder or a left midfielder in a flat four, a 4-4-2 essentially last season. But this season, at least starting from the off, he's been playing in a more deep role. I wouldn't say as a complete six, but the man who was tasked with being given the ball, taking the ball forward and making things happen. An orchestrator, if you will. And he's been doing that pretty well for QPR. Now, he played an hour there last time out, and then was moved out to the right where things didn't go quite as well for him. But we're constantly talking about our midfield as far as the Republic of Ireland goes. And I would be the first to say that I don't always think that our midfield issues are a direct result of the people we have playing in midfield. I think a lot of times we were setting up and it was
structural,
far too much onus on the guys that were in there to go and firstly do stuff that they are not used to doing, which of course is on them, but also do stuff that I think some of the players who are used to doing it from other nations would struggle to go and do in that setup. I think there was too big a gap between our defence and our midfield, and then between our midfield and our attack, but that's probably a story for another day. That being said, the personnel in there could probably be improved upon if we could find the players that were better than the ones that were there. We're used to seeing Josh Cullen and then one of Jason Knight, Jason Malumbi, Jack Taylor. Usually the way it has been going over the last little while. Josh Cullen isn't back for Burnley yet, and coming up to these internationals, there is room for a little bit of experimentation. Now, when Harvey Vale came in, we assumed he would be maybe competing for a position with Finn Azaz, which wasn't ideal considering Finn Azaz is one of our better players and one of our more influential players. His fingerprints are all over pretty much all the goals from qualifying for the World Cup. So if Harvey Vale can be an option a little bit deeper, that might benefit the team as a whole and also allow us to get Finn Azaz and Harvey Vale into the one team.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be ideal, because Josh Cullen was obviously became a really integral part of the team and probably really improved in an Ireland jersey, but then he obviously had the cruciate injury. but we don't have a whole pile of other options there, and we don't have a whole pile of players like that. And I think, I don't know, like if we think back maybe 10, 15 years ago, John Giles would have loved a player like Harvey Vail. Okay, he's small, diminutive, but he's a really good ball player.
He is.
And we have kind of lacked that, especially in the back of midfield and the deep lying positions in midfield. So, yeah, like you said, if we could somehow pair up Finazaz and Harvey Vail, I think that could only be a positive thing over the next few weeks and months.
Two players who are very comfortable putting their foot on the ball and are brave enough.
Yeah.
Brave enough to make a mistake.
Brave is probably the most important part of that, because we probably lack players. We have lacked players being brave.
Yeah. I think as well, Boston Lawal has been playing as a centre half more so now this season than, I say we're 2-3 games in, things can change very, very, very quickly.
Yeah.
He also missed out the second week of the Championship action because he, or maybe the third week, whatever it was, anyway, Championship started a week earlier in Premier League. Mm-hmm. He didn't play one of the weekends because he had a knock, which isn't good reading because Boston Lawal tends to pick up more injuries than you would like him to, but he did play then midweek, obviously in the EFL Cup, scored his penalty as you rightly mentioned before in our pre-show meeting, and they did lose the game though, unfortunately.
Yeah,
Hamer, I think, does view him as a midfielder. I do think the idea on paper, purely the idea, and I don't know whether the Nations League is the time to go and trial it. Maybe it is the exact time to go and trial it, but the profile of a Harvey Vail and a Boston Lawal in midfield, that is exciting.
QPR have played two games in the Championship, won the first and 3-1 against Portsmouth, drew 0-0 against Bolton. Both Dunn and Vale played in those games. The 0-0 against Bolton, they seem to be by far the most attacking team in that game. A lot of people tipping QPR maybe to be in possible danger of relegation this season.
It's a weird one, right? Because, and he also picked up a very nice assist in that opening game, a little kind of scoop ball over for Ilias Chair, I believe, put it away. The QPR one is strange because they've signed a lot of players that have got a very high upside. Like they've brought in Tarik Lamptey, who people remember coming onto the scene in the Premier League and being like, oh my God, who's this guy? Like, and he's kind of never really got going after that. A lot of injuries. So they've got decent players, but the Championship is as stacked as I've seen it in quite some time. So it's going to be competitive. Mm-hmm. And QPR were hot and cold last year. So if they're hot and cold again, they may be in danger of being down there, but they wouldn't be, you know, at the top of my list for teams going down. But that being said, Blackburn would have been. They've started the season very well.
Yeah, Tony Mowbray. The Green Scene and Off the Ball is with Cadbury's, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. One player who, he's a fixture of the Irish team now, is Jake O'Brien. And I think we were all kind of surprised by the story at the start of the week, maybe a bit into late last week, that O'Brien looks to be forcing a move possibly from Everton. It seems there's been a miscommunication, a fallout between perhaps O'Brien and maybe David Moyes. We don't know for sure, but that relationship seems to have maybe taken a bit of a hit over the summer. And Jake O'Brien has not played, obviously, the opening weekend for Everton in the Premier League, didn't play in the League Cup during the week. Now, Moyes was asked about this in his press conference after the game against Preston last night. And he just said, just the same, no problem. I've chosen at the moment not to use him, but he'll be used in plenty of games, no doubt. So that's kind of positive that, right, okay, if he's at Everton, he's eventually going to play. But the rumours of Leeds, Crystal Palace,
West Ham always lurking around big centre-halves.
Yeah, clubs in Italy, clubs in Turkey. Obviously, he's played on the continent before in Belgium. He's played with Lyon in France. What happens next for Jake O'Brien? Does he stay?
It's a strange one because they're obviously playing Merlin Rowe as their right back, who is a midfielder.
Mm-hmm.
So that would indicate that there's a
change in philosophy,
an issue that Moyes has with Jake O'Brien as far as what he contributes in a tactical sense to the way in which they want to play. In a weird way, if there's been a falling out, that's easily solved because it's, well, I don't like you, you don't like me, get out of here. Whereas if it's actually a case of, yeah, I kind of want you around, but you don't really fit exactly what I want at the moment, but I don't want to let you go. And then you're kind of stuck in a bit of limbo.
I said he could be the next £50 million defender last week.
And it's an odd one because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense for Everton to get rid of him, plainly. Because they've got an ageing couple of centre-halves, Jarrod Brantwaite being the exception to that rule. Mm. They've got Michael Keane, they've got James Tarkowski, who up until this season have still been serviceable. They've been okay, they're doing well, Moyes likes them, they're a steady pair of hands, but eventually they're not going to be steady. The longer it goes on. So it's a weird one. I know what you say there about him saying, about Moyes mentioning that as long as he's here, he's going to play, he's going to be used, there's no doubt. We often talk, and especially about Manchester United there, maybe last year, when Ruben Amorim was talking about Garnacho after the European, the Europa League final that time against Spurs when they lost, and the way in which he spoke about Kobbie Mainoo and Marcus Rashford and Jadon Sancho. And you're kind of going, this guy clearly doesn't want any of these players here. Therefore, it's going to be a lot easier to get these players for an awful lot less money.
Yeah.
So there is that side of it too, where David Moyes is a crafty operator. He's been around a long time. He's clever.
Mm-hmm.
It would be kind of silly for him to go, yeah, whoever wants him, come and get him. You can have him for whatever you want. If there has been a fall now, we don't know if there has or there hasn't. But I could see merit for him not wanting to say, I don't want Jake O'Brien, because Crystal Palace could look at that and go, well, you wanted 20. Sure, he doesn't want them. We'll give you 12.
Yeah.
That's not good to David Moyes if he wants to go and sign someone else. But put a wrap on it from my perspective, if Jake O'Brien isn't in David Moyes' plans, he needs to get out of there.
Yeah.
And where he goes doesn't really matter too much. There are certain moves that are going to be better than others, for sure. I wouldn't mind seeing him stay in the Premier League. I know we talk about players going across the continent and how great that is and how interesting it is for us too. He's got a profile that's very suited to the Premier League. So I think if he could find a starting berth as a centre-half for a Premier League team, that would be the best outcome.
Yeah. I actually spoke, I think Ben mentioned it last week, and I totally agreed with him that he should have been moulded, or he was going to be moulded into be like the next centre-half. He actually wasn't going to play it right back. And I think Jake O'Brien also sees himself as a centre-half and sees that's probably the position he wants to play.
That's where he's best at.
Yeah, but he does, like, he's a pretty fine right-back too.
He's grand, yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't know, like, we had the era there, the kind of the end of the Guardiola era in the Premier League, where he started playing just monsters in the full-back positions, and obviously Arteta does that now with Arsenal as well, so he kind of fits that mould. O'Brien is quick. He's a good passer of the ball. He is 25, I think. He's 25. He'll turn 26, not till May next year. He's 6'6". He's an international player. He's got 17 caps. Surely this club's banging down the door to take him. And if he goes to Palace, like, I think people are fairly worried about Crystal Palace this year. They've lost Maxence Lacroix. Easily, he could probably get into that centre-half partnership with under Pierre Sage. Leeds have a few more centre-backs, Joe Roden and a few others, but he shouldn't be short of options.
No, and when we talk about teams and people being worried about certain teams, when you talk about, in this instance, where Jake O'Brien is going to go and be an addition to these outfits like Crystal Palace, like Leeds, like a Fulham, for example, if he was to end up there, they're all of a similar ilk. He would improve their chances of staying in the league, and if one of those sides were to go and sign Jake O'Brien, the wider perception of them, even from in England, not from an Irish perspective, would be, okay, they've strengthened.
Yeah,
I would be less worried about them now than I was before they had Jake O'Brien on their books.
Yeah,
he's not going to be short of suitors.
€19 million he went for Lyon to Everton.
I don't think Everton would be looking to get any more than that. Like, I'd say,
you think?
I'd say €25 million did. Yeah, I think they'd be happy enough with that, especially if it's a case of,
the thing is,
there's unhappy parties involved.
The thing is, his contract expires in less than 2 years' time, so the season after next. Yeah. So this is like where you kind of, you know, you do the proverbial or you get off the pot, you know. This is it. Like, you kind of have to make your valuation goes down, you run down your contracts, you go somewhere for free, you earn the player earns the money, rather than the clubs earning the money, which I think is a good thing.
I do think it's a fluid situation, though. I think if one of the centre halves does pick up an injury over the next couple of days, which obviously we hope it doesn't, they'll very much be like, okay, look, you stay and you'll play.
Yeah.
That'll be it.
And we were speaking with Phil Egan as well, just outside in the office there, that the transfer window in England closes on Tuesday, it's going to be mad.
It is.
There's going to be some mad things going on. Speaking of transfers and free agents, there's a couple of Irish players that still haven't picked up clubs. Seamus Coleman, Robbie Brady, Will Smallbone being three that immediately come to mind. Gavin Bazunu, obviously been at a club, hasn't got a move yet either. Where do we think, what do we think is happening with those lads?
I think at this stage, Seamus Coleman, Robbie Brady anyway, will be moves that are made after the window's closed.
Yeah.
Because at their ages and the profiles they have as far as injuries go, I reckon clubs have got a list of players that they want to sign in those positions. And if, for whatever reason, and there will be some clubs that don't get those targets, and then the window closes, they'll have a scour in the free agent market, and those will be two of the first to be picked up. I would say that would be my idea.
At what level?
See, it depends, right? It depends, because I said this a few weeks ago. Someone else had mentioned it to me. I think Keith Tracy had said it, that Robbie Brady and Salford just is something that we could see happening just based off of where he is in life and where he's lived in the past and all that sort of stuff, the Man United connection. Now, they are in League Two. They're favourites to go up from League Two. They haven't had a flying start to the season.
Two games, two losses.
Yeah, they haven't had a flying start. Would probably be an understatement, but they did play Barnet in one of those games, I think, and Barnet are a good side, so wouldn't be alarm bells just yet to do
Does
it.
Does he get into an Ireland squad if he's been in League Two?
That's what I'm saying, because Robbie Brady's, the level he's at the minute isn't League Two. Like, he could compete. Like, he was getting minutes for Preston last year when he wasn't injured.
Mm-hmm.
So he's more than capable of being up the top end of League One, if not still in the Championship. It's just if he makes the decision to do that, it probably does jeopardise his Ireland chances, you'd have to say, yeah.
If Seamus Coleman doesn't get a club and he retires, is that a huge kind of, impact on Hamer Halligrimson and the squad? Because a few months ago we were planning to have him playing somewhere, possibly playing with Coventry City in the Premier League, possibly playing with, Sheffield United. And if it doesn't happen...
I think it would be strange for him to retire now.
Right.
I think that would be odd, to retire from football now altogether. I think it would just be odd. Why wouldn't you do... I know you want to evaluate your options, have a bit of time to think, spend a bit of time with your family, that's grand. I just think it would be weird to do it now. Unless he's taking the approach, if he's not going to say on. Wouldn't surprise me if he just packed it in and said, right, grand. It would have an impact, yeah, for sure. A playing impact, I'm not too sure how much of an impact it would have in that perspective. But as far as a man in the dressing room, I said this before too, I would like to think that a lot of the guys who we would have perceived as leaders before Seamus Coleman was brought back in have learned a thing or two and have actively chosen to be like, okay, mm-hmm. I was around this guy for a long time and I probably took it for granted and didn't take on board the intangibles that maybe I should have done. And now that he's been back in, there hopefully was an active kind of effort to be like, right, I'm going to apply this to my approach to being a leader, which would then not totally negate, but would lessen the impact, lessen the blow of him not being around. But I do think he'll get a club somewhere.
Yeah,
I could not tell you where.
No.
I couldn't tell you what level it'll be at either.
We do know that he is, training and preparing, I suppose, to get a club. We kind of have to move it on a little bit here with a bit of stuff for time, but we will come back to it maybe next week. But Brentford have obviously had a flying start this season.
They were amazing.
Absolutely brilliant against Spurs. I guess a poor Spurs team now, to be fair. But Nathan Collins at the heart of it, back in the middle of defence, playing as captain, obviously, as well, with Jordan Henderson gone.
Should have scored.
Obviously, got two goals during the week against Birmingham City in the League Cup. And Kelleher, who didn't have much to do, but did have, I think this is a test of a really good goalkeeper, is that didn't have much to do, made one really good save towards the end of the game. But obviously, great start for Damien Duff, Stephen Rice, and obviously Keith Andrews. Brentford look like they've, that they might just pick up where they left off from last year.
Yeah, and they've signed Malik Diouf as well from West Ham only the last day or so. So they've got a fairly scary wing back pairing of Michael Chioda and Malik Diouf. That's not something I think any team will want to be facing off against. 100%. It's as convincing as I've seen Brentford look, and it would be very easy for them to come in this season with a couple of new players and maybe not hit the heights straight away as they did last year. But it's important that they got off to a good start. And as we've heard some players, specifically the Irish ones, talk about what Damien Duff's been like around the place over the last little while. And for guys like him, it's important that the stuff on the pitch goes well, because it just creates buy-in.
Yeah.
Not that there should need to be buy-in for a senior member of staff, but listen, you can't trust a fella or properly buy into what he's saying until
things are going well.
Paying off.
Just to mention as well, obviously Ireland captain Katie McCabe met her debut for Chelsea last night in the Champions League, had an assist. And Coy Gig is back, so if you want to get that in your OCB Football podcast feed. You can find that. You can find it for free on YouTube as well. Coy Gig is back this week. Couple of big weeks coming up for both the men's and women's international teams, but Thursday the 17th of September, it's now the 27th of August, but that will be the men's national team squad announcement ahead of the games with Kosovo on the 24th of September. It's obviously the Israel game a couple of days after that in Hungary, and then there's 1st of October, they're at home to Austria, which is a Thursday night, before playing back over in Serbia against Israel for that game on the Sunday. We will be in Kosovo for the away game to kick off the Nations League. Kick off the Nations League campaign in style.
Hopefully.
In Pristina.
Looking forward to that.
There was 1,600 applications for tickets. There seems to be only maybe around 630 or 640. So if you've managed to get a ticket, let us know. Email us, thegreenscene@offtheball.com. We will be there.
Or if you're pulling a Prague on it and you're just going over because you want to see Pristina and you're just going to go to the pub and watch the game, also let us know.
Let us know. I think there'd be a fair, you know, amount of those Ireland fans who didn't, or who weren't successful in the ballot, that might be hopping around Pristina. Let us know. Get involved. We'll be very keen to talk to you, especially Matthew.
Yeah, I'd be annoying you with the microphone.
And yeah, we'll have a whole content plan. We'll also document our own journey to Pristina. Turns out it's not the easiest place in the world to get to.
No, and Prague's pretty easy to get to, and I made that difficult, so I'll make this even more difficult.
Yeah, so Matthew's going to fly via Iceland, Kosovo. No, he's not, but it's going to be it's going to be a journey and a half, but we'll be there in Kosovo in Pristina for the very first game of the UEFA Nations League. Are we excited for the next couple of weeks? Now, we have obviously four games in that window. It's hard to be excited.
Yeah, there's just a lot going on around it, isn't there? There's just a lot of noise around it, and rightly so, and that's going to be the case, and that's going to rumble on and on and on. But, listen, it's always a phrase that I hear hearing, like, on the football side of things.
Yeah.
It is exciting, because we're getting to see the Republic of Ireland back out on the pitch, and it's a time where experimentation is possible. It's also a time where we can, get a bit of forward momentum ahead of a home European Championships in 2 years' time.
Yeah, these games are super important. But yeah, Green Scene and Off the Ball is where Cadbury's a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. Matthew, thanks very much. Hopefully next week Ben will be back. It just depends. He still could be out tanning himself somewhere in South Spain. Who knows? But thanks to Charlie Lane in the box, and thanks to producer Ben. That's all you have time for on this week's episode of The Green Scene. Back next week.
The Green Scene on Off the Ball. With Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams.